This podcast is part of the Christian Geek Central Network at ChristianGeekCentral.com.
Strangers and Aliens, Episode 90, Fantasy Movies, Looking Forward and Looking Back.
Welcome to the Strangers and Aliens Podcast.
Strangers. To boldly say what needs to be said.
Would you be a stranger or an alien? Or would you be a strange alien?
The truth is out there. I am your father's best friend's plumber. Superman.
Wonder Woman.
Heroes. Villains. Captain Picard versus Captain Kirk.
Do you think that there's room in sci-fi for God? The very first thing that God did was that he created something, so we have a creative God.
This is Strangers and Aliens Podcast.
Hello and welcome to Strangers and Aliens. This is a podcast where we talk about faith and fiction. And to be honest, sometimes we talk and talk and talk. But I am one of your three co-hosts, Dr. Jace O'Neill, and this is I'm here with Ben Avery and Steve McDonald.
Hi, I'm Ben Avery, and
I am the aforementioned Steve McDonald.
So now you've heard our three voices. You've heard our three names. We'll see how that goes.
If you haven't turned this
will you remember who's who?
We are the three best good-looking podcast hosts out there, and we're a podcast, so you can't really see us, so try disproving that. My wife thinks I'm good-looking anyways,
Yeah,
I don't expect you guys to comment on that.
I don't know. Your wife doesn't say anything about me, so I don't know if she thinks I'm good-looking at all.
Yeah. I don't think you'll ever hear a comment on that, Steve.
Because she's just too polite.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think it's time for us to actually get to our topic.
Dun, dun, dun.
I will say this. Actually, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say we wanted to forecast that this is actually going to be a shorter episode because of what we were doing previous to this episode.
That's right. We were actually speaking with Peter Franson from the Spirit Blade Underground and the Christian Geek Central Network, which we are a part of, Christian Geek Central at ChristianGeekCentral.com. We're a part of that network where you can find blogs and podcasts and forums and just a nice central location to talk about your faith and your geekiness. So, yes, we were talking to Peter. He's actually – I'm not sure when it's going to appear, but we'll let you know. He was just kind of wondering, talking about what do we do? What's Strangers and Aliens? So if you're listening, you probably already know that, but you can still check out the interview when it comes out. So.
Yeah. If you really want to hear more of us.
Right, right. So for now, we do have a very, very cool topic. And actually, two things kind of sparked this topic. One of them, something that I have been on the record as saying it would not happen.
Which I find ironic because in our last episode with that interview, you're claiming that you're the one that was always right, and this just disproves that.
Yeah.
I had written this off as never happening. I looked at the numbers, I looked at the costs, and I looked at who could make this happen, and I just said to myself, it's not going to happen. But let's talk about the thing that we all knew was going to happen, and just these things were both came out on the same day. But the Hobbit trailer hit on, I think it was 2 days ago. We're recording on a Thursday night, and I think it hit on Tuesday.
Yeah.
What do you guys think?
I hope it's better than the first one.
What do you think of the trailer, though? What do you think of what you've seen?
You can tell Steve doesn't like it.
He's not impressed.
He is not excited about this.
Peter Jackson's not listening, and I don't think any, of the actors, are.
I don't know if
you never know that. Just if he is listening, Peter Jackson, I will be in any film you do. Please cast me.
I don't know if there's anything in the new trailer that really is over the top. Wow, you know, this is going to add, you know, this is twice as good as the first installment or anything like that. You know, I think what they're going for is the continuation of it, the continuation of the story. So,
Go ahead.
I was going to say that to me, it looks somewhat similar to the first one, but I'm hoping, but it also had the potential to be that more serious, deeper second film. And I'm hoping it will be the Two Towers of this series somehow. Because there seemed to be a little bit more of a serious tone to it, from the one I saw.
Yeah, there definitely was some interpersonal conflict going on between. I'm assuming this guy was Bard from, not that he was Bard from the city, but he is the man named Bard from the city on the lake. It seems like there's more going on there with just how people are responding to each other and talking to each other and then warring with each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I don't know. My son liked it a lot. He really liked the first movie though.
Yeah.
And I was watching it and I'll have the same criticism that I had of the first trailer. It seems like some of those special effects aren't done yet. And I don't know if it's just because of because of the frame rate for watching it online. Mm-hmm. Or it might be because it literally hasn't been rendered in full yet.
Right.
But then why would they release that?
Well, you know, it wasn't like main things, though. It was more like, you know, some of the background imagery, you know, some of the forest stuff in the background or city stuff in the background. I think part of it is because you have to release something. Then again, we're less than 3 months away from the release of the movie.
Yeah, so. 2 months. Yeah,
it comes out my birthday weekend.
Happy birthday!
So,
well, we pitched in and got you a Hobbit movie.
Lord of the Rings has been part of my tradition of my birthdays for a while, so I always like it when they come out. I was hoping Narnia would pick up that tradition. They started that way, and then they started messing with the formula. But.
You just said the magic words, though, Dr. Jace.
I know.
I'm going to predict that Silverchair will be hitting Christmas after the third Hobbit.
It needs to.
It'll
because that what they hit on gold because I don't think they realized it, but coming after Lord of the Rings, it was filling. People were looking for something like that, something with fantasy, and it was a proven time frame. And so when they did with the second film and they pushed it to the summertime, they were basically setting it up to fail. So I'm hoping the Silverchair will come out on Christmas time.
So let's talk about this for a moment here. We just kind of threw it out there like everyone knows. There was an official press release that came out, again, I believe it came out on Tuesday. And it said, the C.S. Lewis Company has entered into an agreement with the Mark Gordon Company to jointly develop and produce The Chronicles of Narnia, The Silverchair, the fourth book published in C.S. Lewis's famed fantasy series. The announcement was made today by the C.S. Lewis Company. Mark Gordon stated, like many readers, both young and old, I'm a huge fan of C.S. Lewis's beautiful and allegorical world of Narnia. These fantasy stories inspire real-world passion among millions of devoted fans around the world. As we prepare to bring the next book to life, we are humbled and excited to contribute to the outstanding legacy of Narnia. And it's your standard press release where they say, this is what we're doing. Here's some quotes about why it's so awesome that we're doing it. And then it gives, you know, all the information about the companies involved. I will say this, though, Mark Gordon Company, anyone know what that is?
It's Mark Gordon's company, isn't it?
I guess so. I'm assuming he's some sort of producer or something.
I guess we could hope.
You know what? Let's look him up. Here he is. Okay, yeah. Oh, wow. He had a start in ABC After School Specials. He moved to CBS School Break Specials.
Well, there you go. That's the trifecta right there.
Executive producer in Speed 2, Cruise Control, which the best part of that whole movie is the subtitle, Cruise Control. Yeah. Okay, so he's a producer, and he's done he was a producer on, looks like 2012, 10,000 BC. So he's done some big special effects movies.
Just movies with numbers in them. Speed 2, 10, 12, 10,000.
Okay. So, I mean, that's what...
Are you looking at the same one? Because the one I'm looking at is all a bunch of TV.
It is, but he's it's at the end of his list, toward the end of his list.
So I didn't realize that. Yeah, I mean, I've had a chance to meet Doug Gresham. In fact, we discussed this over chair. This is probably, I don't know how many years ago it was, but people were asking what would be the next film, and he let us know then that the next film would be The Silver Chair. And so this is something I've known was coming for a long time. I just didn't realize it was going to be with the Gordon Company.
A week or two ago, someone posted some things about they were going to do an interview with Douglas Gresham, and they were going to ask him about movies. And I saw this, and I'm just like, it's not happening, you know? Just get over it. It's okay. We got what we got, and it's great. And we have Tom Baker as Puddle Glum. It's okay. It's okay. But apparently, and I am not ashamed to admit when I'm wrong, I was dead wrong here. I was pessimistic, and it was totally misplaced. And I'm excited. How are you guys feeling about this?
I'm excited that you were dead wrong.
I won't be excited. Thanks, until I won't be excited until I see who's distributing the film.
Well, yeah, that's the big thing. Yeah,
that is a big question,
because they've gone from Disney to Warner Brothers, and now they're where do they go from here? So, you know, what's the did they say what the budget was for it?
No, there is nothing about that. It's just we're doing this. Here's some of the names involved, and but again, I'm looking at this and I'm thinking to myself that we are going to see, because they pushed Hobbit 3 to December. It was going to be in the summer originally, summer of 2014, but they've pushed it to December of 2014. 2015, Christmas season, Silver Chair. That's my guess. 2015, yeah, but summer is really, 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 really busy.
Yeah,
but
but again, depending on the distributor, that will tell us, will it be December 15, 2015 in main theaters, or is it going to be 2015 direct to video?
Yeah.
Oh, no, it won't be direct to video.
Well,
no, until you know who the distributor is, there's no way to know that, because they don't have, I read a little bit about it. But unless they have a distributor behind it, I'm tempering my expectations, because just because they're making it does not mean that somebody's going to pick it up.
Oh. I think it's going to be an after school special.
He does have some experience there with his production company. I'll admit when I'm wrong, but I'm not wrong here. It might be 2016. I'll go that far, but. The one thing I'm curious about, though, is if they're going to try and really keep it in continuity with the other three Narnia big budget, you know, blockbuster movies.
Well, who are the recurring characters from in Silver Chair?
It is only why can't I remember that kid's name? Eustace. It's only Eustace Scrubs. He's the only one who comes back in Silver Chair.
And he was really good in Voyage of the Dawn Treader.
He was great, but he's really old now. No, he has a movie that just came out. It's some sort of raunchy kind of comedy thing.
Oh,
and
good.
He is, I don't know how old he is, but he is so different. He is like 2 feet taller. And he's...
No more scales.
He's obviously, he's lost the whole, you know, claws and everything like that. I mean... But I can't imagine they'd use the same for that character, for Eustace. On the flip side of that, though, they're still okay with the main four. If they do Horse and His Boy, they can use the main four in their adult form because they'll be naturally aged. The same with if they do Last Battle and kind of say, well, we're not going to de-age them. You know, we're going to go ahead and bring them in as adults, but I could see it working. And then you have Magician's Nephew that doesn't have any recurring characters except for Aslan.
Right.
Yeah, again, until, you know, because, you know, when they're building a budget, they don't have a Disney or a Warner Brothers bankrolling this thing. So, or Walden Media. So, again, until I see some of that stuff, my expectations is very, very low, because we're talking about recurring characters and special effects, and that stuff's extremely expensive, because every time you do a sequel, you have to pay them a lot more money. You know, so again, until I see those things, I'm going to be very cautiously optimistic about it.
One thing I wonder how you're talking about budget and bringing some people in, Liam Neeson as Aslan. My guess is he'll be out of their budget.
I mean, it's just his voice. So.
Yeah, it's a voiceover, so it depends on how much screen time and all that. So
true.
Yeah,
that's true.
Or they could go. What they could do is go hire one of those celebrity sound alikes.
They could actually.
Yeah.
They could.
Or the guy that played the Focus on the Family. Aslan. What was his name? He played Poirot in the...
Oh, I don't know. I'm not even trying to know. Okay, so anything else to add about Silver Chair or The Hobbit?
No, I'm looking forward to find out more about him.
Me too. And I was glad to be proven wrong. Glad. It's an easy story to do.
Yeah.
And unlike Voyage of the Dawn Treader, hopefully they'll learn from Voyage of the Dawn Treader. But Silver Chair is a straight story. It's just point A to point B with all the stuff that happens in between and some pretty interesting and cool philosophical arguments at the end.
I really hope that it happens and does well, because I want my favorite book to be done, Horse and His Boy.
Okay. I always like that one too.
Yeah,
it was a good one.
Yeah,
but I think it sort of begs the question. I mean, you have the two, obviously the two big guns. You have the Hobbit. You have the Narnia books. You know, with that back on track, and you know, the Hobbit going strong. What other fantasy books would you like to see made into movies?
Armor Quest. Oh wait, is that a little too self-serving?
Now, that was on my list. Remember, you told me.
I haven't done any shameless plugs in a little while.
Hey, wait. Crazy Circus World. I'm going to give a shameless plug. My
Timepiece. It's got to be Timepiece, Ben.
Crazy Circus World, my fantasy book, needs to be a movie.
Okay.
That would be
so
a fun cartoon.
We've got the shameless plugs out of the way. that is a good question. And apropos. To the conversation here. What would you like to see made into a movie? Fantasy. We're talking fantasy now.
Well, I actually kind of like the current trend of seeing these new fables and old fairy tales be done, you know, if they're done well.
Right, right.
Unfortunately,
right.
Several of them have not been done well. But I'd like to even dig deeper into the Grimm and Hans Christian Andersen's history and pull out some of those really cool classics.
That would be cool. I would probably go even deeper than that.
Oh, no. Okay.
The Fairy Queen.
Wow, you went deep.
I did.
Ooh.
It's fantastic.
Wow, you went deep, dude.
It's pretty deep, yeah. But it is fantastic. And the thing is, you could go with the core story and do, like, you know, 2-hour movie. You could stretch it out to 7 or 9. How many books were there? You know, there's just so much material that you could go with that, you know, it lends itself easily one way or the other.
Wow. Well, I'm going to feel silly with mine then.
What's that?
The Great Divorce, another C.S. Lewis book.
Oh, yeah.
But I'd like to see that made into... It's a visual book. Of course, the episode hasn't released yet, so you guys haven't heard it. But in my interview with Mike Perna, we talked a little bit about The Great Divorce, but The Great Divorce, I think, would make a fantastic movie in the right person's hands. It could also make a terrible movie in the wrong person's hands, but what else? I mean, that's the way it is for anything.
Yeah.
Beyond that, there's the series, Terry Brooks. It's the Magic Kingdom of Landover, I think is what it is. And it's the Magic Kingdom for Sale sold And that was a cool series. I really enjoyed that. I'd be interested in seeing that as a movie or as a TV series.
And well done, I think, is the pivotal word here. I mean, you know, Till We Have Faces is another one that C.S. Lewis wrote. It would be fantastic if it was done the way it should be done.
Was it, from what I was under, last time I heard with, in our meeting with Doug Gresham, who is kind of in charge of C.S. Lewis's estate, he was in talks with Ralph Winters, who was the producer for the first couple X-Men movies, and Star Trek and a few others.
And the Planet of the Apes remake.
Yeah, several of them.
Tim Burton.
So they were in talks to do Screwtape Letters, and I just haven't heard anything about that. So that's one I would love to be seen done well. And on top of that, because I think it was largely influenced by that, the book This Present Darkness, I think could have been a very interesting, if done well. It could also be done very poorly.
And the sequel.
That one I know was going around Hollywood for a long, long time through a lot of different people. So, go ahead.
Well, two non-Christian ones that I'd like to throw out there too that I think would be interesting. And I think it might be close to, you know, the time to strike because the iron is really kind of hot on both of them. The first one would be White Company by
Arthur Conan Doyle.
I was going to say Sherlock Holmes, but Arthur Conan Doyle, because of all the Sherlock Holmes stuff that's out now. You know, you have people looking, you know, into Sherlock Holmes, and you know, there's Elementary on TV, there's Sherlock on BBC.
White Company has nothing in common with them except for the name of the guy under the title.
Right, that's the thing. You know, it would be time to strike because his name is out there so much. And also The Belgariad by David Eddings. I know he has been pretty vocal about never wanting to see video representations of his books. But with cut this part out.
Oh, thanks.
What's the big fantasy thing that's on TV now? It's a huge series, and you're working with the guy.
Game of Thrones.
Okay, rewind.
I'm not cutting that out.
You can't. No, you could. So with the Game of Thrones, it would be the type of thing where you could easily market it that way, and even write more stuff. If you haven't read The Belgariad, which is the first, it's a 5-book series. It's just fantastic, and it's very real. There's not a lot of heavy, you know, magic and dragons and things like that. It's more of the fantasy feel to it. Although there is magic, it's not as heavy even as like the Lord of the Rings.
But you're saying it could make a really good movie in the right hands, right?
Yes, in the right hands.
So
that's the caveat for all of these.
Okay, well, let me ask you guys this then. All right, we talk about in the right hands, it makes a great movie. What would you say would be the best fantasy movie, or your favorite fantasy movie? Whose hands were right for fantasy? And I'm going to throw this out there and say you can't say Lord of the Rings, because we'd all say Lord of the Rings. I think. Am I right?
Louis. We're trying to find
your
things that have been done.
Yeah,
that have been done well.
Your favorite fantasy movie that's not Lord of the Rings or Star Wars. So,
Big Fish.
Ooh, good one.
Ooh.
I like Big Fish.
No, I thought it was very well done, and it touches me on a variety of different levels.
Yeah, that's
interesting.
And I like it because it's Tim Burton being Tim Burton, but at the same time, it's not Tim Burton being typical Tim Burton.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a good one. I had not. I don't think I would have even thought about that at all.
Oh yeah, no, it's one of my top.
What about you, Steve?
I went more like traditional sword and sorcery type fantasy with my picks. I would say The Princess Bride.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be up there. That'd be, yeah.
And, I would agree.
Also,
if I could go comedy, that would be my favorite comedy. fantasy.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool. Also, I'd say Sleeping Beauty.
The Disney movie.
The Disney, yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, yeah. In a lot of ways, the search for the Holy Grail, Monty Python's Holy Grail.
Yeah, right. Steve, I'm glad you mentioned. Those are some good ones. Monty Python would be up there for me. As far as Disney films, I would have to say the number one ones for me would be Lion King, Toy Story, and Incredibles.
If you're going to – well – I don't know if you're going
to put... Wait, are you trying to out-Steve each other, guys?
Yeah, exactly.
If you're going to put superhero movies in to fantasy, that it's going to sort of skew it in a completely different direction.
The Dark Knight.
Guys, stop. No. Stop Steving each other. All right?
No.
That's right, Steve. I just turned you into a verb, dude.
Cool. I've been verbalized.
All right. Well, can I... Can I come in with my five?
No, you can't participate.
No, just narrow it down to one, Ben. Come on.
Okay, I am going to give you two. Okay, one is The Dark Crystal.
Okay,
and that's one that I come back to and watch. I enjoy watching that over and over again, not because of the deep story, although you can see Jim Henson really trying to get deep with the themes and stuff like that, but he's not getting very deep with story. It's got a deep concept, but the story itself is it's thin, but it's just the world building that happens there, and I really, really love that. And then another one for me, and they're fighting with each other right now, but Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind, was an animated film by Miyazaki, and I don't know how to pronounce his first name, and honestly, I can't. I'm probably saying Miyazaki wrong as well, but. I mean, all of his movies are fantasy, really, when it comes down to it, even the ones that are more realistic and grounded. But Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind is just – it's Lord of the Rings in graphic novel form. And then they kind of took the 7 or 8 volumes of the graphic novel, distilled it into a 2-hour animated movie before he had actually finished writing the graphic novel. So the ending is – but it's really – again, world building. This one has a deeper story and just interesting technology, and they don't explain everything outright. And I really liked it. They did He did Princess Mononoke as well, which is another really good one. But Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind. Maybe it's more traditional than some of the other ones, but I really, really like it. So
traditional is good.
It is. So you guys mentioned some favorite fantasy comedies, and I don't think I could top Princess Bride or Monty Python's Holy Grail as far as fantasy comedies go. I can't even think of any other ones other than those two. But you have any fantasy movies that they're just so bad they're good for you? That you like going back to, even though...
Monty Python and the Holy Grail? I mean, really? It's so bad, it's bad? Good. Well, yeah, considering that they didn't have any budget and they totally put everything together on a makeshift thing, yeah, I would say. Because, I mean... The whole cartoon episodes were not originally planned that way. They just didn't have any money to film it.
You know what, though? This is something I found really interesting. When we were doing work on The Hedge Knight, Mike Miller is the artist of The Hedge Knight, and I scripted the adaptation for him. Mike asked George Martin about, where are some places I can look to get ideas for costuming and stuff like that? And George Martin said, Holy Grail. Because they didn't try to glitz it up at all. He said it's dirty, it's rags. He said that's the costuming for this, realistic, so to speak. I mean, George Martin, when he writes fantasy, he's writing fantasy that's supposed to be grounded in like the reality of the Dark Ages or whatever. And so he said watch Holy Grail.
Well, I would say that there's one movie when we're talking about fantasy sci-fi that I think is so bad that it's good is because it's so horribly bad that it's funny. And that's it's a Christmas film called Santa Conquers the Martians. It is so bad.
Is it fantasy or is it sci-fi?
Yes.
Yes. Well, it's Santa, so it's
Well, it's fantasy in the way that Star Wars is fantasy, though.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's space and there's rockets, but come on. There's no reality here.
It is bad.
You know what? Princess Bride has become our New Year's Eve tradition with me and my kids. Santa Claus Conquers the Martian has become a Christmas tradition with me and my kids.
Yeah, it has too. Santa Conquers the Martian. We can't watch it for long, but we put it on at some point because it's so darn bad.
Oh, we subjected my wife to that movie this past Christmas.
Wow.
Oh, man. She was in pain. I mean, it was almost literally torture for her. Notice I say almost literally because, you know, I'm using the word correctly. But, yeah, it was bad. She just kept saying, why are we watching this?
Wow.
And we're laughing. We're enjoying ourselves. We're making comments. This is before my kids had seen Mystery Science Theater 3000. I'm possibly going to look into watching the Mystery Science Theater 3000 version of it this year. But then I don't want to ruin the purity. So
purity. Oh, that's good. Yeah, it's sort of like when my wife watched the holiday special, the Star Wars holiday special. And, you know, I fast-forwarded through everything except the cartoon. And I just sort of told her, like, plot points and, you know, showed her, oh, this is Jefferson Starship and, you know, all the different things. And at the end of it, it probably took us like 20 minutes all told, even by watching the actual cartoon and everything. And afterwards, you know, she just wanted to have the experience because she'd heard about it and all that stuff. And she looked over to me and she said, I will never forgive you for that. And I'm like, what? I fast forwarded through most of it. So, yeah, there's certain things that we just can't watch. You know,
it was a family event for us. And I said, and actually tomorrow night we're doing another family event that we're going to make her sit through a Gamera movie.
Oh, cool.
But this is Mystery Science Theater 3000. So,
yeah.
So there's at least that aspect of it where it's helping you to get some entertainment out of it. But for me, some of my favorite cheesy movies, though, are Godzilla movies. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, they're just, some of them are so cheesy, but I still enjoy watching them. And I have no justification and no defense for myself.
No, no. It's all good.
Yeah, that's kind of embarrassing, actually.
They're just good. I mean, if you're looking at something and saying, you know, this is the budget they had. This is what they did with it. You know, that they set out to put someone in a rubber suit and they set out to make Tokyo and, you know, out of newspapers and cardboard boxes and things. And they did it. And they followed through with their vision. So, I mean, how can you say it was bad?
There is a quality to it, to the skill and craft involved, but there's also an inherent cheesiness as they try to really make it palatable for children.
Yeah.
And I say that, and I don't want to sound like I'm being condescending. I still enjoy it. And there's some weird stuff going on where they're trying to make a kids movie, and you're just like, that's what they're trying to tell kids? You know, there's the one movie where it's all about a kid who's getting bullied. And then he gets involved with bank robbers, and then he imagines stuff going on Monster Island where Godzilla's son is being bullied by another monster. And that's how he deals with – it's almost like Home Alone with monster hallucinations in it. But how does it end? The kid himself, as the other kids are bullying him, he goes and pushes a ladder out from under a painter. Like he becomes a bully. This is what they're saying. You know,
horrible.
You're bullied? Okay, hallucinate about monsters, and now you become a monster.
The power of Godzilla possess you.
Yeah, exactly. It is insane. I don't know what they're trying to, I don't know what they're trying to say.
I had a date like that once. Well, anyway, the one that I would choose is this fantastically bad movie called The Magic Sword from 1962.
Yeah, that is bad.
It's pretty bad. It has Basil Rathbone, so you would think, "Wow, this must be a good movie." But other than that, you know, it's near the end of his career, and I think you know he probably did this for you know to get some money. Not a bad thing if you need the money. I mean, you're acting in a movie, but it's just a fantastically bad movie, but it's just fun. I mean, the dragon is ridiculous, and the sets are cheesy, but you know, it's basically a very loose retelling of the, you know, the George and the Dragon myth, St. George and the Dragon.
Can I give you a secret?
Okay.
I started watching that movie. I like bad movies.
Yeah.
I could not finish that movie. So
you guys, we started this whole conversation because of the Silver Chair and the Hobbit information, the kind of news releases. So with that being said, because that's, you know, Tolkien and Lewis, and both of them, all of their stories have a lot of depth to them. So what do you think is your favorite spiritual theme in a fantasy film that's not Lewis and Tolkien?
So okay, so this is revenge for me taking out Lord of the Rings and Star Wars on the earlier question.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Take that.
It's Taken. I've got it, and it's Taken. And do you want me... I'll go first, okay?
Yeah.
I've got two. Okay. One is Time Bandits, and just the whole idea of evil in that movie. I'm not saying it's a true spiritual theme, but it is definitely something that whenever I see it, it gets me thinking about why it's wrong and why it's bad. And I'm like, okay, you know, and it actually kind of, I don't know, confirms or firms up some of my actual thoughts. But on a serious note though, Superman, the first Superman movie, and some of the other ones too, but that's probably, from a spiritual perspective of, you know, being a hero, having to make sacrifices to help other people when you don't, you know, he's powerful enough that he doesn't have to sacrifice anything, but he chooses to, you know. And I keep coming back to, a lot of people say, you know, Superman is the Christ figure, but I look at Superman as the Christian figure. And, you know, so that's probably where I would go with my favorite spiritual theme, if I can't say in a fantasy movie, by Lewis or Tolkien. So
cool. I would probably have to say true love.
What?
True love.
True love. Oh. From Princess Bride.
Gotcha. I thought something else was going on.
I thought you were yelling for Stella.
I was deflating.
Stella!
Stella! Just the way that Wesley absolutely and positively loves, you know, the Princess Bride, and just the entire movie, he's, you know, even in the deceit of the dread pirate Roberts, he's you know, getting her back, and he's re-winning her and all that stuff. And when they finally know who each other are and know the background and all that stuff, and you can just see that this is it's a representation of what true love is. It's not, you know, these people fell in love and then they fell out of love and then they fell in love with other people and then, you know, they found each other later and they realized that, you know, this love was the truest love. No, they loved each other from the beginning. You know, even if when she was going to marry the prince, she was in mourning because she was going to marry the prince, you know, and just that overwhelming display of love, I think is rare to see in movies nowadays.
I think for me, I actually had one, and then you guys start talking about superhero stuff, so that brought something else to mind. I'd
incredible.
Say one, I was, it's not a movie theme, but it's one that I want to be made into a movie. I don't know how they do it, but I'm sure if you get the right person to tell the story, it could be a very beautiful story. And that's The Giving Tree.
I've heard they're making that movie.
Are they?
I think I saw some casting news recently.
Good. Yeah, I would like to see that. So other than that, I would say that one of my favorite superhero films is X-Men 2. And part of the reason why is because of the theme of faith. which is focused in on the character of Nightcrawler. And there's one scene where Nightcrawler, you know, talks to Storm and talks about faith. And so I've always really appreciated that about that film.
All right. We actually do have some feedback from our listeners about some of their favorite fantasy movies. And you know who's back, guys?
Who's back?
Shazbot.
Yeah.
Yo. What is up, my homies? It has been a long time. Too long.
Yeah.
Way too long.
So how was it in prison? sorry. We're not talking about that.
Where were you, Shazbot? Where have you been?
Well, we went out to Los Angeles to visit an old friend, Chet Anderson.
I like the way you punctuate your dialogue there.
Yeah, hyphen. Period.
So Chet Anderson, that sounds like just kind of a normal guy.
Well, Chet Anderson is his human name. His robot name is Chet Anderson 3BX. Anyway, you may not know him, but you have seen his work. I got to know him during my time in Hollywood. He played the robot policeman who kept smacking his head on the wall in THX 1138 and one of the robot gunfighters in Westworld. His last role was as Doc Matrix's stand-in for Spaceballs, but they did hire him to play the robot police officer in Star Trek 2009.
Okay, well, that's good that he's still working, I guess. But,
wow.
That's not really why you're here. not to talk about Chet Anderson, what were you up to?
Sorry, right. So while I was in Hollywood, I was asked to audition for the role of Batman in Batman vs. Superman. I think I almost hit the part, too.
Batman? Who's Batman?
What happened there?
Check this out. I don't know how they didn't hire me. Listen. Ahem.
Do robots need to clear their throats?
I am Batman.
What? Was that Batman?
They cut me because it wasn't gravelly enough. My voice wasn't gravelly enough, but Ben Affleck's was. I call shenanigans. Anyway, I tried out for a few movies, but there is just no place in Hollywood for humanoid robots anymore. They keep giving those parts to human actors. The Android Union is not happy, but what can you do? Am I right?
I guess. Yeah. You would know better than we do.
So let's get to the feedback here, Shazbot. We're talking about fantasy movies, and I think some of our listeners have a favorite fantasy movie. Shazbot, do you have a favorite fantasy movie?
My favorite fantasy film? Clash of the Titans. The old one. Maybe because my pal Ed Torkelson for 96 played Bubbo the Robot Owl. He saw the future, man. He was humanoid. Two, but a total body reconstruction to look like a robot owl. Of course, that limited his options even more. He played Bubbo in the 80s and then they brought him back just so he could lay in a junk pile in the remake. Sus story.
But that's not why you're here, and we don't want to hear about what Ed Torkelson 496...
Right, let's get to the listener feedback. David Goulet said Lord of the Rings is my mainstay, but a lesser-known classic, in my opinion, is the New Zealand film The Navigator. Hard to find, though.
Have you guys heard of that movie?
Yeah.
I think I've heard of it.
The kid in it?
I'm guessing it's not. You're thinking of the Disney movie?
I guess. I
like Flight of the Navigator? Yeah. I've not heard of this. David, I'm interested in hearing more about this movie because, I mean, if it's a go-to for you, is it worth finding, even though it might be very hard to find?
Nathan James Norman's choice was, quote, Babe, the film with the little sheep pig, unquote.
Actually, that's... What do you guys
think
about that?
Sheep pig?
Babe?
A sheep pig?
Yeah, instead of a sheep dog.
Oh, okay. I was trying to picture like a cross between a sheep and a pig. I'm like, what unholy contraption would that be?
It's definitely fantasy.
Excuse me?
It's definitely fantasy.
Yeah, it is. I thought it was a very well-done movie.
I think it's a really well-done movie.
Yeah.
I even like the sequel. Babe, Pig in the City.
David Clements hedged his bets by saying, quote, I think this kind of falls into the category of fantasy, but if not... Pretend I said something else, Hellboy.
Well, by your guys' standards, you keep bringing up superhero films and throwing them in there. So sure, Hellboy's good.
Yeah, and I think that he also said Hellboy 2 along with that. But
Drew Rob's pick was Beastmaster, because the two thieving ferrets were just the best.
You can't beat thieving ferrets. Maybe you could beat it with thieving parrots, but...
Maybe parrots, yeah.
Bruce Huber only had three words in his reply. Conan. The Barbarian.
That's three words.
And Andrew Musser said The Princess Bride. Pure fun from beginning to end.
Yeah.
Delightfully quirky. And probably my favorite, quote, feel good, unquote, film.
Yeah, we talked about Princess Bride in this episode.
Yep.
Elora Powell had one answer, but may have dragged back after reading Andrew's, when she said, I can't think of a favorite, but I've always had a fondness for Willow. Yes, it is a bit weird, but I like it. And it has my name in it. I enjoyed The Lion, The Witch and The Wardrobe, but after that, the movies kind of went downhill. Wait. No, I do have a favorite. Princess Bride. No contest there, I suppose.
All right. And then we also asked the question about how people felt about the Hobbit trailer and the Silver Chair. And there was basically a lot of people were excited, but they were hedging their excitement, kind of like you, Dr. Jace, just waiting to see, I guess, what happens there. Now, I did ask if anyone had a question for Shazbot, and Shazbot, what was the question we had?
Daniel Butcher asked, why didn't you save me from my evil twin brother?
Shazbot?
I guess my answer to that one is, he's still there? Oops. Sorry, man. Slipped my mind. You're right. You know, you could have asked about that a while ago, once you realized you were still, you know, living in a house with an evil robot. For over half a year.
So... Shazbot, is there anything that you could do? Is there like a code word or something that he could say to shut down your evil twin brother?
Fish heads.
Okay.
Roly-poly fish heads?
Yeah, apparently. Well, thanks, Shazbot, for showing up. We appreciate it.
My homeboys. My hambras. It has been too good to see you again. Don't be strangers, my friends. Unless you're being strangers and aliens. Know what I mean?
Oh, Shazbot. You
right.
Still got it.
Well, with that said, I don't know if there's really much else we can say, guys. You guys want to... Do you have anything to add? Any final words? Last thoughts?
You know Phantom. We never do, so I don't know why you keep asking us.
Phantom Tollbooth. I forgot. It's a horrible movie from the 60s with Eddie Munster. And they need to remake it, and they need to remake it well. So, Phantom
Blather Tollbooth. And Blatherskite.
What?
Blather and Blatherskite, the superhero from DuckTales. He always said that.
Oh, what was his name? Was it Roboduck?
Roboduck, yeah.
Oh, yeah. He could have a movie.
Yeah.
He could. Creature Tech, Doug Tenapole, graphic novel. That's a fantasy movie I would like to see happen.
Yep, cut out the squares. Yeah.
Yeah. And keep in the Shroud of Turin. okay. Well, with all that said, you guys want to say goodbye?
Goodbye.
Bye.
And Godspeed, everyone. You've been listening to the Strangers and Aliens podcast, hosted by Ben Avery, Steve MacDonald, and Dr. Jace O'Neill. Our music was composed and mixed by Tim Leffel. Please join in the conversation by visiting our website, strangersandaliens.com, where you will find show notes, articles, reviews, and more. You can also email us directly at podcast@strangersandaliens.com, or like us on Facebook at facebook.com/strangers, or you can leave us a voicemail on the Strangers and Aliens hotline. Just call 1-804-37-ALIEN and leave your message. And once again, thanks for listening.
Blatherin Blatherskite.
What?